Hi, I'm Steve Westerly, and this is Beneficial Intelligence, a new weekly podcast with stories and pragmatic information for CIOs and other IT leaders. This week, natural experiments. Scientists know that the gold standard for experiments is the randomized trial, where you select one group of subjects and randomly assign either the intervention you want to examine or don't do anything. So in medical science, one group of patients get the active compound, another group gets a placebo, an inert pill, a pill that does nothing. Then you can see some got the pill, some got well, and you can compare the two groups and you can see you have a proof that your intervention worked. That's not always possible. So economists have been trying to recruit university students and have them play small games for a few dollars and have discovered some interesting things about the psychology of buyers. But if you want to really find out something about what happens in the real world, you have to look for a natural experiment. And economists have always been scoring the world for natural experiments. An example where two groups of people or subjects, companies, might be subject to different conditions. So in a classic example, the unfortunate citizens of London were subject to a natural experiment in sanitation. There were, in the 1850s, several different water companies supplying the wells in London. And in 1854, there was an outbreak of cholera in Soho. John Snow, a doctor from London, plotted all the cholera cases on a map. In a classic example of good infographics, he discovered that all the cases clustered around a specific well. When that well was shut off, the cholera epidemic subsided. Further investigation showed that the wells where people did not get sick took their water from upstream in the Thames. The well where people got sick, unfortunately, took their water downstream, further down from where sewage was being dumped into the Thames. So the Londoners there were subject to a natural experiment. Some got water from upstream, some got from downstream, and that informed something that about sanitation, about cholera, and the relationship to sewage. Another example is mobile phones in India. An American economist was studying what happened to fish prices in India when mobile phones were rolled out in the late 1990s. See, economic theory says that the price in all markets should be the same, because if goods are more expensive in one market, then buyers would migrate to cheaper markets and sellers would migrate to more expensive markets. They wouldn't find buyers and there would be a balance. That was not the case in the fish markets in India, because a poor fisherman out at sea would have to travel to whatever city, whatever port that was closest, or whatever where he thought he would get the best price. So you could see that the cost within a specific area was varying wildly, because sometimes there were too many fish, sometimes there was too few fish. When mobile phones were rolled out over time, this American economist looked at the fish market, at the fish prices, and he found that as soon as mobile phone service became available, markets started behaving like economic theory said they should when there is full information. That is, the prices did not vary that much, because a fisherman could call at sea, he could call to the various markets and find out what the prices were. So that was a natural experiment. There was a before and after mobile phones. In the coronavirus responses, Denmark, where I live, and Sweden form a natural experiment. Denmark had a pretty strict lockdown. Sweden was more relaxed. And when this is all over, economists and doctors are going to be poring over the data and comparing Denmark and Sweden, because we're a natural experiment. And there might be some information to be gained from that. You have also been running natural experiments in your organization. Coronavirus disruption means that there are many things that have been done differently. And you didn't plan to do that, but if you're measuring, then you can see what the impact of the different approach after the coronavirus, after you've changed your behavior because of coronavirus. For instance, hiring. You would normally get people to come to your office. That incurs a cost on the applicant. He has to travel to your company, and the people available will tend to be people who live around where you have a location. You will have to spend time having scheduling interviews, and there is a certain cost involved in the hiring process. Today, you're doing your hiring virtually. You're meeting the applicants via video link. The applicant doesn't have to travel. The applicant might be more relaxed in a familiar setting. You might be able to involve more people because it's just a matter of finding a time. It's not a matter of actually physically having to move people together. So you had a certain hiring process before Corona and you had one during lockdown. And if you have a measure, for example, employee retention, then you can see whether your lockdown hiring was more effective or less effective than your normal procedure. Now, if you see that the people that you hire during the coronavirus, you hire as on a basis of video interviews, if you have lower retention there, if people are leaving again because they weren't a good fit because you hired the wrong people, that means that the video hiring was not a good idea. But if you're measuring retention, you can also see that maybe video hiring was a good idea. Maybe you got a different set of candidates and maybe you have the same retention or maybe even higher retention. So you have a natural experiment. So if you're measuring, you can figure out whether the change you've made, whether that's an improvement or a step backwards. Similarly, you have probably held fewer meetings. Did that negatively impact the organization in some measurable way? If it didn't, well, maybe you don't need to reinstate those meetings when people start getting back in the office. People have been working remotely. Have you seen productivity drop? Some people have seen productivity actually increase. On the other hand, some organizations see burnout increasing. If you're measuring, you can figure out whether more remote working or 100% remote working as you might have been doing during lockdown, whether that is an improvement or not. And many organizations, many IT organizations have been building very rapidly, been building tactical IT systems. Suddenly we needed an IT system to keep track of this or that. And there has been IT system rolled out in maybe a tenth of the time it would normally take using modern rapid application development tools. If those applications are successful, then maybe you should do more rapid development with these tools and less of the old-fashioned way of building systems. So if you're measuring, you can take advantage of the natural experiment that the coronavirus crisis has provided you with. And if you're not measuring success in your organization, well, maybe it's time to start now. Thank you for listening to Beneficial Intelligence, a weekly podcast with stories and pragmatic information for CIOs and other IT leaders. If you like the content, please spread the word. If you have comments, please get in touch. My contact information is in the show notes. See you next week.